At the Movies with CJ Johnson.
CJ, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening. Thank you very much. I gather, Philip, that you are an Ian McEwan fan.
Yes, I am. He's a British writer. I am a fan of his. He's got this new film out called, well, he wrote the screenplay, I understand, On Chesil Beach, which is the title of his book of the same name, of course.
Yeah.
We've got that in Black Klansman. All right, let's start with the Ian McEwan film. As I say, it's not always writers do get the chance to write their own screenplays, do they? But he did in this instance.
He did in this instance. And also the other thing is, which I think is very much a truism, is that it's not always literary novels that translate well to the screen. In fact, it's actually a bit of a screenwriting maxim that they don't. That the best films are made actually from airport novels, you know, potboilers. So Jaws or The Godfather, you know, those are the kind of books that make good movies. Whereas literary novels that, you know, navigate the landscape of the human soul rather than, you know, a shark eating somebody, are much more difficult to translate to the screen. And that is definitely true. Like, most literary adaptations, I would say, don't work. And Ian McEwan has had his fair share of adaptations. Enduring Love was made into a film. There have been quite a few, actually. And a lot of them don't work.
Atonement was made into
Was made into a very good film, yes. Yeah. That really did work. That's one of his more cinematic books, I would suggest, and that really did work. And interestingly, Atonement featured a 12-year-old Saoirse Ronan. Well, Saoirse Ronan is all grown up now. She's been nominated for multiple Oscars, hasn't won one yet, but I would guarantee that she will at some point. She's still only like 23 or 22, and she is the lead in On Chesil Beach. Did you read On Chesil Beach?
Yes, I have. I have read the book, yeah.
Yeah, I read it too. I loved it. I love all his books. I've never not loved one of his books. But this one, I would say, is one of his more minor books. It's not particularly long, and also it is compact in its story. Indeed, the actual story of the book takes place over a couple of hours among two people. And it's fleshed out by, as I say, the landscape of the mind and the landscape of the human heart. And translated onto in filmic terms, it's fleshed out by flashbacks. But really, you're talking about a very small story about two people who are on a beach, and then they go up to their hotel room, and then they're on a beach. And it takes place in about 65 minutes. You know, it is a quicker story than it takes to read or watch the film version of. But it's about more than that, because it's actually about Britain and class and the 1960s. So Saoirse Ronan, who I just have to say, along with Ian McEwan being one of my favourite authors, I would have to say that Saoirse Ronan is currently the actor that excites me most. After Lady Bird and after a few other things, she is just, to me, she just consistently is the most compelling screen actor for me at the moment. So she plays a young woman with the incredibly British name of Florence Ponting. And she has just been married this morning to Edward Mayhew, played by an actor I don't know, a young British actor named Billy Howell. You don't see their wedding, but they are now standing on Chesil Beach, which is one of these stony, rocky beaches, I guess in Dorset. And there are clouds, you know, it's a very English beach. And looming near them is the only hotel on Chesil Beach. And they know that their afternoon and evening will consist of them going up and having a dinner for two in their room, and then will proceed to the matrimonial bed. And as the book and as the film moves through those stages, you realize that for both of them, that matrimonial bed, due to their lack of experience in all things sexual, and also due to the fact that it is England in 1962, that matrimonial bed to them is about as terrifying as an electric chair. Neither of them know what to do. Neither of them have been told what to do. And they are both terrified in all sorts of ways. They're terrified of disappointing each other. They're terrified of disappointing themselves. They're terrified of disappointing, you know, their generations of family who are locked into their own brains. So it's tricky stuff to bring to the screen because a lot of it is internal, a lot of it is their fears and anxieties. But Ian McEwan has been allowed to adapt his own novel. He's got the sole screenwriting credit, and I think he does a magnificent job. Mm. This is a really, really good adaptation of a really, really, really good book. The performances are both brilliant. Saoirse Ronan gives another performance that just deserves an Oscar nomination. She is just staggeringly good, so good. And what they're both playing is the kind of role that Anthony Hopkins played so brilliantly, basically from his 50s and 60s into his 70s, which is that English repression, that Englishness that is absolutely stunted by Englishness, by class, by anxiety, by history, by tradition, by all of the unwritten and written rules and conventions and traditions that England lives under. So, and this film and book, it's so specific that it takes place in 1962 because it's just before the revolution. Mm-hmm. You know, if this film took place 7 years later, both of these young people would know a lot more about sex.
Of course.
Mm. Now, this is hardly the first movie or book to say that England in 1962 was still absolutely riven by class consciousness and riven by anxiety about sex and tradition and all this. You know, so it's nothing new. It's nothing revelatory, but it is in the telling. It is in the details. And McEwan is a master at the telling detail. And this film is full of them. Every shot just gives you a little bit more that says something about this terrified state of mind.
All right. Here's a little from On Chesil Beach.
I really don't mind if you want that Hank person. Or is it Elvis?
Chuck Berry. It's all right. He's gone, he's had it.
Honestly, you can. I think it's... He's quite...
Quite what?
Well, sort of merry.
Chuck Berry. What else?
And, you know, bouncy.
You know, I think you must be the squarest person in all of Western civilization.
But you love me.
Therefore I love you.
It's also, if you're attuned to this type of thing, it's very funny. Mm. In a very dry, incredibly British way.
Okay, On Chesil Beach. Now, the other one, well, looks to be a couple of promising ones this week because this is a film directed by the famous Spike Lee, Black Klansman.
Yeah, this film couldn't be in its own way more timely. Once again, it's a period piece set in 1979 in Colorado Springs, in Colorado, in the United States. But it was released in the United States last Friday on the anniversary of the events at Charlottesville, the one-year anniversary of the events at Charlottesville, where there were the two conflicting protests and, unfortunately, a woman was run over and killed on one side of the protests. And that was highly deliberate on his part because, although this film is set in 1979, it has unbelievable resonances for now. This is what Spike Lee has always done. He has always made films that are about race relations in America and about the huge, terrible way that America cannot communicate with itself about race. And he always does it with comedic flair. Mm-hmm. He's always been making comedies about race. That's what he's been doing since the very beginning, since She's Gotta Have It and Do the Right Thing, which is his masterpiece. He makes these incredibly funny films that are also burning with anger and are unbelievably powerful in the way that they pinpoint what is wrong with the way America cannot come to terms with its own racial problems. And he does it sublimely. And he does it again very well in this film. He has sort of dipped out of the grander conversation for the last decade or so, especially in Australia. In fact, I think his last four feature films weren't even released in Australia because there is in cinemas, because there is this totally acknowledged maxim among theatrical distributors worldwide that quote-unquote black stories don't play outside the United States. And he is considered by distributors to be a black filmmaker who makes black stories. But this film is getting the big release all over the world because it is so accessible. This is a really, really funny film. So now the thing you must remember about this film is it's all true And it's not only all true, but supposedly it sticks very close to the actual facts.
Hang on. So it's a film about the Ku Klux Klan and it's funny?
This is, yes. Absolutely. Really? Yeah, yeah. You've got to remember the filmmaker we're talking about. This is Spike Lee. He's perhaps unique in being able to make this film. Mm-hmm. You know, even if Quentin Tarantino tried to make this film, he might have got some bad egg on his face. But Spike Lee, who's in his 60s now, you know, he's the preeminent black American filmmaker slash satirist ever. So it's about the true story of a black policeman, the very first black policeman ever to be admitted to the Colorado Springs Police Department, who one day calls up the Ku Klux Klan and on the phone, because they're advertising for members in the local paper, and they think he's white. And so he goes undercover to join the Ku Klux Klan. But of course, he can't show up because he's black. Mm. And so he colludes, in the good sense of collusion, he colludes with one of his colleagues, a white colleague, to then be him to actually turn up. So essentially the two of them are both undercover as one fictitious person.
It's a true story.
And it's a true story. Oh, so yeah. The black cop is on the phone and then the white cop shows up using the black cop's voice and turns up. And the two of them infiltrated the local chapter of the Ku Klux Klan. And while they were undercover and actively infiltrating this chapter, the grand wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, the infamous and very real and very much still alive David Duke, showed up to Colorado Springs, and it all led to this black undercover cop meeting him face to face. And okay. That's what this film covers.
Wow, it's an intriguing story. This is a little bit from Black Klansman.
I didn't want to say we're trapped, but that Peckerwood had a gun in my face. And he was an ass hair away from pulling the trigger.
And he didn't.
But he could have. And then I would have been dead. For what? Stopping some jerk-offs from playing dress-up?
Flip, it's intel.
Well, I'm not risking my life to prevent some rednecks from lighting a couple sticks on fire.
This is the job. What's your problem?
That's my problem. For you, it's a crusade. Mm-hmm. For me, it's a job. It's not personal, nor should it be.
Why haven't you bought into this?
Why should I?
Because you're Jewish, brother. The so-called chosen people. You've been passing for a WASP. White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, cherry pie, hot dog, white boy.
That's a really good piece of dialogue, because the Adam Driver character, who's the white half of the duo, is Jewish. But being in Colorado, he's never really had to deal with it. Mm. And when he goes undercover to the Klan, he for the first time realizes that they dislike Jewish people as much as they dislike black people. So he has this awakening. It's a very, very rich film. And as I say, it's unbelievably funny and entertaining as well.
Okay. All right. Stars on Chesil Beach?
4.
Okay. And Black Klansman?
4.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a great week for movies.
On you, CJ.
Thanks.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.